want you to go again to Romans chapter 1. We're looking at God's message in the stars. Now, the other night I was reading from the Gospel in the Stars by Joseph A. Seitz. That's one you can read, but the one I'm going to give you this coming Sunday is another one of Cap's books. He gave me 800 of them free. I think that's nice of him. We're going to buy the rest. The Glory of the Stars, A Study of the Zodiac, by E. Raymond Capt. I was reading from it last night, but I prefaced it with Romans chapter 1. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven, verse 18, against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. When has the wrath of God been revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and all unrighteous men? If what you mean by that is the expression of God's wrath on ungodly men, that hasn't happened yet. Jesus stopped in the middle of a sentence because the time of vengeance hadn't come yet when he was reading from the book of Isaiah. So it doesn't mean the expression, yet it's past tense. Don't tell me it means the wrath of God is revealed from heaven, that the Bible reveals that his wrath from heaven will be revealed, which is going around a circle. I didn't want to say it. Saying he's talking about people who didn't have the Bible. Now adjust your traditional viewpoint and view scope and let Paul say what he said. The wrath of God is revealed from heaven. Look up into the heaven and you're going to see that the heavens themselves tell a story of the wrath of God against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men. The ultimate victory of God against the dragon and against sin. Now, when we look at the zodiac, most of the church world's turned off on it because the devil has grabbed the territory. Somebody made me a little chart. Got to back up a bit, Larry, and let me see it like that. Now that is another way to design what we were showing you. See the earth with the arrow pointing this direction? Going around the sun. And as you sight through the earth or through the sun, as it makes its trip around that bend, it enters those various constellations. And in the circle of a year, at a different time, or a different day rather, at the same time, you'll be looking at a different constellation. Now, I demonstrated this last night by having one of the cameras represent the sun and the other camera represent the earth, and the whole room represent the constellations on a equal band around the room is what's called the celestial equator of the heavens. And then the earth going around the sun makes the sort of, it doesn't parallel the equator of the heavens. At times it's above it, at times it's below it. So you will have a different sighting on the constellations. But from the most ancient times, and nobody can tell you where it started, the signs all had common characteristics drawn with strange figures that the particular stars do not necessarily require. But from remotest antiquity, the signs have been essentially the same. 12 major constellations. Your astrological charts begin with Aries. One of the most ancient astrological charts give you the key, which is the Sphinx. It literally breaks the constellation belt and puts a Sphinx between Leo and Virgo. That's the mystery of the Sphinx. The head of the woman, the body of the lion. Start with Virgo and end with Leo. And you will solve the mystery of God's message in the stars. Now, the stars are the same, the message is the same, they come from a common root. As all the flood stories come from a common experience, a flood. Some of the flood stories, in the oft-told repetition without God's protection of revelation, take on mythical qualities totally unbelievable. More unbelievable than just the simple story of the flood. God protected the story that he delivered to his oracle people, and that's the right one. Likewise, in the stars was a message that dates back to the descendants of Seth, back to Adam, but primarily to Enoch. For 365 days, walked and talked with God. Now, Paul, centuries later, is saying the wrath of God is revealed. Nobody's without excuse. Or with an excuse that will stand, rather. Because that which may be known of God is manifest, for God showed it, for the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood with the things that are made. He then goes on to condemn man who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. And once again was seeking to lift the baby out of the bathwater that's been thrown out. This is the third lesson on it. If you start with Virgo, the signs from ancient time tell God's message. And each constellation has three decans from the ancient word that means a piece or a part of. We carry it into English in the decks of a ship. Every major constellation on that celestial equatorial band has on one side or the other of it associated constellations, three each. Starting with Virgo, you have the major constellation of a woman reclining. In all the most ancient myths, no matter how sensual and earthy the myths become, Virgo is a pure virgin lady. Yet paradoxically, she carries in her hands the symbol that doesn't normally go with virginity: birth, seed, the righteous seed in one hand, the righteous branch in the other. That's where God's plan of the ages begins. God in the Old Testament, through his law, laid down the law. If you have sinned or lost an inheritance, you cannot have that inheritance restored by a stranger. Only one near of kin can do it. The whole book of Ruth in the Old Testament is put in the Bible to teach, in a love story, that drama of the kinsman redeemer. Strange things in the book of Ruth can only be understood if you know the law of God that's laid down about the kinsman redeemer. And the so-called barefoot kinsmen, they had a custom, as they would sit at the gates of the city and draw up contracts. If you removed yourself from the competition, you would take your shoe off and shake it out. That, in essence, says, I'm removing myself. There was a kinsman nearer to Ruth than Boaz, and he had the first right of redemption, but he refused to do it. He's called the barefoot kinsman because he took his shoe off and removed himself from the redeeming position. And if I were preaching on Ruth tonight, I'd tell you the meaning or the antitype of the barefoot kinsman. But Boaz was the type of Christ, the kinsman who was a kinsman, who had the price, who was willing to pay it and did pay it. And that's why the whole book of Ruth is in the Old Testament. There are people that don't find in the book of Ruth much about God. Yet it is probably the most New Testament of the Old Testament books in portraying the one who became our kinsman redeemer. Jesus could not redeem lost mankind without becoming our kinsman. And as you've heard me say, the word kind, be kind one to another. It's more that marshmallow silliness of Christianity. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Don't even know what that means. And you got people slobbering over one another with sickening PR is what it really boils down to. They wouldn't be caught dead preaching a Hell's Angels funeral. They love their souls. They don't love them. You say, would you? Sure. They don't know what being kind is. Being kind is not some superficial tone in your voice. Well, he just doesn't talk sweet enough. I've had people write me letters, the cruelest things I've ever read, and they close it in Christian love. I'd like to shove their Christian love into certain delicate portions of their asteroids. Just keep shoving it until they learned how tough it was to love. Christian love. Well, I love you. Don't prove what you do. I love you all. Horse spit. You don't love me. You love your self-righteous imagery. I've had people come mouthing love so they could turn me to a piece of hamburger. I don't want that kind of love. Be kind is what the word means. You ever seen a brother and sister that grew up and in their whole life never ever raised their voice to each other? You ever seen a brother and sister like that? If I had kids like that, I'd pray God take them home. Such a blob as that, I don't want to raise. You had a brother and sister grow up, never said a word that didn't sound like honey rolling over a biscuit. When I was a kid and there was an evangelist came to preach for my dad. And he got up and said he had lived with his wife so many years and they had never had a cross word. I knew then that preachers lied. I knew it. It's like that bird going around saying he pastored a church for 12 years and nobody ever had a headache in it. Well, I run a mausoleum, 35,000 buried in it. Nobody has a headache the whole 8 years I've had it. B Be ye kind one another is a contraction of be kind one to another. The old saying, blood runs thicker than water. You may fight with each other, but you'll line up together against the enemy. I'll fight for any of these people in the church world if the government gets on their case. I just don't want to have to look at them every night. That's being kind. Thing I like about heaven. Do you know how much space there'll be in heaven to get away from the rest of those people you don't want to spend time with up there? Where are you going, Scott? Well, there's this corner of heaven over there that the rest of the Christians haven't got to yet. I'm going to check it out. They're going to say, what's old Scott doing? Well, he's the moving star of heaven. He just keeps going. But I'm kin to him through the blood of Jesus Christ. Somebody gets on their case, I'm going to defend their rights. I wish Christians would grow up and understand what God's trying to get. He never told us to like anybody. That phileo slop, mutual love, he never commanded that. He commanded agapao, which is to value someone because of the value Christ paid for him with his blood. He valued him. Now, Jesus voluntarily took flesh and blood that he might kin himself with us. The necessity of the virgin birth, as W. Gresham Machen said years ago, it had to be a combined divine and human production. Because as the Hebrews letter says, stating it as a mystery, God did not bend down and help fallen angels, but rather he bent down to help us, and we who voluntarily can do nothing about it, we are flesh and blood. He voluntarily, who didn't have to become flesh and blood, became flesh and blood with us. Now, if God can speak and the worlds can be formed, God can speak and by a spiritual act in the womb of a virgin, a child was formed, and the associated constellations bring that development forth. The next constellation is Coma, the infant child, that in ancient antiquity is called the desire of the nations. The centaur, which has been taken in mythology and twisted out of shape and become idolatry, but throughout the most ancient myths, the centaur is that strange half man, half animal. In their minds, the simple truth of a dual nature that was hated both by the gods that were false gods, the heathen gods, and by the mankind that he came to help, who is the healer, the deliverer, always going about helping. Mankind that resents him, who dies of a poisoned arrow not intended for himself, and who, though immortal, volunteers to die that life might go to another, who as his reward from the gods is elevated and placed among the stars as the symbol of the resurrection. All this in the first constellation, the child that's the desire of the nations, the centaur, and then Bootes, the shepherd who guards his sheep and harvests out of the earth, That's the first constellation. Straight off. And as the Sphinx says, with the head of the woman and the body of the lion, start with Virgo. The truth of redemption begins to unfold. The righteous virgin with the righteous seed, the righteous branch, producing the desire of the nations, the infant one who is the two-natured being who becomes the shepherd of his sheep to protect his sheep, and move right on to the next constellation, Libra in the Latin, the scales, showing that ancient truth of balancing as the criteria of making it in. As old as the Old Testament truth, where the shekel that was given as redemption must measure the half shekel in the holy place inside the tabernacle. Immediately, this righteous seed born of the virgin, that he might be kin with us, this two-natured being, God and man, in the divine meaning, the centaur, man and the animal. Notice it's the rear end of the animal. That's good Bible. God calls the sinner a wild ass man that deserves to have his neck broke. The two-natured being who is the shepherd of the sheep confronts the scales of righteousness, tilted on the low side, deficient toward the scorpion. The scorpion about to destroy him. Confronting these scales, he must face the cross, the southern cross that's under the feet of the centaur. The main constellation, the scales he must face. The supporting decans, the cross that he must face. The victim, sometimes called the wolf, Lupus, the victim, the animal slain by the spear of the centaur himself. As I taught last night, it takes many images to teach the truth. This is no different than the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, the sinner brought the sacrifice, the animal. The animal was slain. A priest, third party, perform the sacrificing act. In the New Testament, Jesus was all three. He became the sin offerer, the sin bearer, and the sin offerer. He was there to present himself as the sacrifice. He took our place both as the sinner and as the sacrifice, and he was the high priest who offered himself. In the constellation, the seed of the woman, the two-natured being, the one that is to be the shepherd, the desire of the nations, he confronts the scales, faces the cross, becomes the victim, and in so doing obtains the crown, the corona borealis, that he just snatches literally from the mouth of the serpent. Immediately you move to the third constellation. This is all review from last night. The righteous seed, the infant born of woman, the two-natured being who becomes the shepherd, who will lay his life down for the sheep, confronting the righteous judgment, the scales, faces the cross where the price must be paid, becomes the victim. God wrote this message in the stars. Man didn't place them there. Man's distorted it, picked pieces of it, built idols to it, worshipped it. God placed it there. He obtained the crown. He confronts Scorpio as we move to the third constellation. That sign of Satan. The associated constellation decans are serpents, Ophiuchus, the man who's wrestling with the serpent, winning seizing the serpent and holding the serpent that's about to seize the crown, and Hercules, the mighty man who in all mythology is the hero who fights evil. As the one born of woman faces the scales, becomes the victim, obtains the crown, he confronts the dragon. As you look at the constellations, you'll see above Scorpio 1 foot of the man that's wrestling with the serpent that has been wounded. The foot has been wounded by the tail of the scorpion, but the other foot is over the star that is the heart of the scorpion, about to crush it. As Jesus was all of the symbols in the Old Testament, both the center, the offering, the sacrifice that is, and the priest who made the offering, he is variously represented. He was the seed and the branch in Virgo. He was the child, Coma. He was the one that came with the scythe upraised to harvest and guarding his sheep. He was the two-natured one. Each of them symbolize him. As you move to the next symbol, he confronts the scale, he confronts the cross, he becomes the victim. When Scorpio is introduced, Scorpio changes and becomes the serpent in the next decan. But it's God fighting with this serpent, ultimately to be victorious. So as we confront Scorpio, the decan that is associated, two of them, serpents, Ophiuchus, the man who's wrestling with the serpent, have to be considered as one. I've already shown you the other picture of the scorpion. Come closer to this. His lower foot has been stung by the tail of the scorpion. This foot that's in this particular picture is on the heart of the scorpion. But in the symbolism, the scorpion is also the serpent. He's wrestling with the serpent, keeping its head from reaching the crown that was part of the previous constellation. So the symbol of this struggle is being carried forward. Further in Hercules, the mighty man who is winning victories over evil. Now, as we go through those three major constellations, a simple introduction of the truth shines out of the stars. One born of woman, the righteous seed, the desire of the nations, the infant, the two-natured one who will be the shepherd of his sheep, confronts the scales, faces the cross where the price must be paid, voluntarily becomes the victim. Voluntarily symbolized because it is the spear of the centaur himself that produces the victim. Nobody kills him. He lays his life down. Confronting the scorpion, wrestling with that old serpent to keep it from obtaining the crown. Fighting against evil as Hercules. We now come to Sagittarius, and the review is over. And I pick it up here. Sagittarius focuses in on the centaur with the arrow drawn and a bow in it. Remember, Revelation 6, in this book I've written no, no, no on the one paragraph I have to quarrel with. He is not. The centaur does not symbolize Revelation 6 because that's Antichrist. A bow with no arrow. The centaur has an arrow. The sign Sagittarius, 69 stars. Am I boring you? 69 stars, 5 of the third magnitude, 9 of the fourth. In the sign Sagittarius, we again have the figure of a centaur, indicating the double-natured seed of the Virgin, the Son of God as the Son of Man. The figure is that of a mighty warrior with a bow and arrow riding forth majestically. The barbed arrow. Now, if you'll look close, you'll notice that as we moved around the constellation belt, Previously, we were over here. Back off a bit. And you that are looking on radio, if the pictures were side by side, previously would be over here where my hand is. Because in an earlier picture where my hand is, we had Ophiuchus wrestling with the serpent, and he had one foot lifted that had been stung by the tail of the scorpion, and another foot on the heart of the scorpion. Well, here is the scorpion's tail, and here is that foot that was stung, right here. See that? Come in a little closer so you can get it, Larry. There's the foot. There's the tail of the scorpion. Now back off, Larry. Which means that if I had a both pictures side by side, where my hand is here would be the scorpion, and up here would be the man wrestling with the serpent. Now we moved on over to the centaur, and the reason I want to point that out, the foot, get my whole hand in, the foot of Ophiuchus wrestling with a serpent is right down here on the heart of the scorpion. Remember that? This arrow is pointed straight at that same heart. As one of the symbols has his foot on that heart of the scorpion, in this case, the two-natured being, five of the bright stars, five of them of the third magnitude are in the bow, and the arrow is pointed straight at the heart of the scorpion. This conflict, which Paul calls the wrath of God revealed from heaven against all ungodliness, is focused in every case. The psalmist wrote of this archer, "But God shall shoot at them with an arrow, suddenly shall they be wounded." In Hebrew, the name of this constellation is Kiseth, which means the archer. In Arabic, the name is Al-Kaus, or Al-Kaus, meaning the arrow. In Hebrew, the names of the two brightest stars are Naim, which means the gracious one, and Nahushla, meaning the going or sending forth. Under this constellation, in the ancient zodiacs of Egypt, is the word Knim in hieroglyphics, which means he conquers. According to Greek myths, Chiron, the most famous, or Chiron, the most famous of the centaurs, was the great teacher of mankind in heavenly wisdom, medicine, and all noble arts. He is the one who voluntarily gave his life for another. You know your mythology, know that. The Hindus, and as I've often said, just about every religion has, and every cult has truth at its heart, taken out of shape. The Hindus, although lacking understanding of the promised seed of the woman, did recognize the nature of the meaning of this constellation of the centaur. The Indian sacred books, there is a tenth avatar predicted when Vishnu, the second in the divine triad, is to come as a man on a white horse, overthrowing his enemies, rooting out all evil from the earth. This archer is at war with the scorpion. As Ophiuchus, the man wrestling with the serpent, was crushing the heart of the scorpion, naming its ultimate outcome, though bruised on the heel by the same scorpion, holding the serpent until it couldn't get the crown. As Hercules is victorious, winning, the centaur is fighting the scorpion and is victorious. With Sagittarius, the centaur, are three decans. As always, each major constellation has three decans that elaborate its truth. The first decan of the centaur is the lyra or the harp, but it's usually pictured as a harp and eagle combination. And there's your picture. It consists of 43 stars, one of the first magnitude, one of the third, five of the fourth, eight of the fifth. Modern atlases depict the figure in this sign by an eagle holding the harp, or a harp placed over an eagle, representing triumphant songs springing from the eagle, the vanquisher and destroyer of the serpent. In the older zodiacs, the constellation is marked by the figure of an eagle who darts forth upon his prey from the heavenly heights with great suddenness and power. I could go on and give you all kinds of verses on that. Lyra contains one of the most superb of all the first magnitude stars. Its name is Vega, which means he shall be exalted. Now, isn't it like commercial America to name one of the dumpiest cars after the greatest star? Vega, which means he shall be exalted. Its actual magnitude is probably 100 times that of our sun. Now, you that know the precession of the equinoxes, at a given moment, you sight the pole star in, and it's as though the sun is moving back through this constellation, and because of a wobbling in the Earth's axis, a certain polar star at a certain position, it takes 25 to 28,000 years of the movements of these heavens for that star to be in the exact same position again. So as it takes 365 days for the Earth to go around the sun, 365 and a quarter, and sight in on these constellations at various points above and below that equatorial celestial equator, the total movement within the heavens in the wobbling of the Earth as it goes around sights in on a different star as the North Star. Right now the polar star is the North Star. You sight through the poles of the Earth way off out there into the heavens, and a certain star is right there. Polaris is it now, though it's a little off center. 14,000 years ago, assuming these bodies have been moving that long, and if God put them in orbit just bang 7,000 years ago, which he didn't, by the way, because he was brooding over the Earth for centuries before he recreated it. But if 7,000 years ago, as some want to believe, he just spoke and it was all there, and I believe he spoke and put it going, but I think it was a little longer than that, he timed it in such a way that if it had been at the rate it's now going, 14,000 years ago, Vega would have been the North Star. 11,000 years from now, Vega will be the North Star if things don't change. Right now, Polaris is it. When the pyramid was built, Draconis was in that position. You see, this whole thing's going around. See if I got a picture here. Cap does a pretty good job of showing these things. He does good diagrams. Yeah. When you get this book on Sunday, study this diagram. It will help you notice. If you can zoom in a little closer, you'll see he's got it mapped out when Vega was the pole star, because the Earth was tilted in a direction as it went around the sun. And as it's been making its trip, Polaris is now. This one over here is the way we're positioned now as we go around the sun, and the pole of the Earth is pointing to Polaris. But in the precession of the equinoxes, because the Earth doesn't just go around the sun and spin on its pole, what it does is it wobbles, so that at different times during the 25 to 28,000 years, it's pointing a little different direction as it goes around the sun with its pole. So right now the pole is pointing at Polaris. 14,000 years ago, the Earth went around the sun all right, but it was pointed away that made the pole star be Vega. And 11,000 years from now, if it keeps going the same way and tilting and wobbling, it'll be pointing toward Vega again. Cap's got nice little diagrams. Now, two other conspicuous stars between the fourth and fifth magnitudes are Shalyuk, which means an eagle, and Sulafit, which means springing up or ascending as in praise. You don't have to check all these. I have. That's why I have all these other books and etymological roots. This is one of the finest little summaries that I know of. And I'm going to give it to you Sunday because I think you ought to have it. The placing of the harp, the oldest of stringed instruments. You want proof of that? The oldest of stringed instruments? And we having fun. And Lamech took unto him unto Enoch was born Irad, and Irad begat Mahujael, and Mahujael begat Methusael, and Methusael begat Lamech. And Lamech took unto him two wives. The name of one was Ada. Chapter 4, Genesis. By the way, this is a different Enoch. This is the Enoch that's the son of Cain. Ada begat Jabal. He was the father of such that dwell in tents. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all such as handled the harp and organ. Boy, that's a long ways back. I mean, that's quite a ways back that they were playing the harp. That's interesting. The placing of the harp, the oldest of stringed instruments following Sagittarius, connects preeminent gladness, joy, delight, and praise with the actions of this great archer with his bow and arrow. Thus he appears in this sign, answering to the Lamb as John held him in the fourth and fifth chapters, blessing and honoring, glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne. So here is the centaur at war, aiming at the scorpion. Associated with him is the harp and the eagle together. The eagle pouncing on the prey with the harp of joy. I rather like that. Beating the hell out of a devil, diving on him with the eagle's claws, and playing the harp while you do it. Oh, I like that. I mean, at least the stars know what to sing about. That's something to sing about. Also with Sagittarius or the centaur, Ara, the altar. It consists of 9 stars, 3 of the third magnitude, 4 of the fourth. Now nearly all the star charts show the figure of an altar covered with burning fire to denote this constellation. The fire is burning downward in this case toward the lower regions of darkness called Tartarus, known as the outer darkness, the area toward the covered and invisible South Pole. The word Ara was sometimes used by the Greeks to imply a curse or the effect of a curse, ruin and destruction in the zodiac of ancient Egypt. The figure is different but carries the same basic idea. There we have in ancient Egypt for Ara, a throned human figure wielding a flail over a jackal, the unclean and cunning animal of darkness. And the jackal, also identified with the dragon, is being threshed and bruised and punished and brought under dominion and judgment and pushed into fire. This constellation symbolizes coming judgment, the burning pyre that is aimed toward, downward, the ultimate judgment of the dragon, cast, beaten, bruised, cast down into darkness and into fire. Let's keep going and I'll summarize it. The third decan, we're in the constellation of Sagittarius, which features the centaur with the arrow, the two-natured being, victoriously into victory with an arrow pointed at the heart of the scorpion. Associated with him is the eagle pouncing with the harp, symbol of rejoicing. Associated is the altar of death. Now, an altar has come to mean only spiritual things. An altar also became a place where curses, it was a place of meeting God in covenant, and it became a witness to where you would sacrifice and pour downward. The flames of the burnt offering would ascend upward, but the blood of the sin offering was poured downward onto the ground, associated with the centaur. Are the symbols of the eagle coming in victory, the harp of joy at that victory. The better symbol is the most ancient one of ancient Egypt, where the victorious one is beating the jackal and driving him into the flames, but an altar that empties its flames downward into darkness. The last Decan is Draco the dragon. It streams across the sky, as you see from this picture. Once more, we come to another symbol of Satan, the enemy. From earliest times, the scorpion, the serpent, the dragon. The figure of this constellation is a great serpent wound over at least half the northern sky. It consists of 80 stars, 4 of the second magnitude, 7 of the third, 10 of the fourth, and so on. His tail alone extends over the territory of a third part of the stars. The Greek name Draco for this sign means trodden on. Now, the first prophecy of Scripture, Genesis 3, says that the seed of the woman will tread on the serpent. From furthest antiquity, this serpent is named the trodden on. In the zodiac of ancient Egypt, this sign is shown as a serpent under the forefoot of Sagittarius. I also want you to notice that in the arrangement of the sky, he's under the foot of Hercules. That's Hercules right there. From a previous constellation, that's the foot of Hercules right over the head of the dragon. The most prominent star, well, wait a second. In the zodiac of Egypt, this sign is shown as a serpent under the foot of Sagittarius and is named Herfint, which means the serpent accursed. The most prominent star in one of the coils is named in Hebrew Thuban, which means subtle. And as you look at the whole, I wish this were on radio, but you'll have the book next week if you show up at the king's house. In one of his most prominent coils, the bright star in this serpent is Thuban. That star means, in Hebrew, the subtle. One of Satan's name is the subtle one. Thousands of years ago, Thuban, as Polaris is now the North Star, and Vega would have been the North Star 14,000 years ago. It won't be, I can tell you for sure, 11,000 years from now, because God's going to rearrange after the millennium new heavens and new earth. But going backwards, 14,000 years ago, Vega would have been the North Star. Either at the time the pyramid was built, or the pyramid was built to make this fixation occur. The descending passage of the pyramid, you could go down that passage to the bottom, and whether it was daytime or nighttime, you could see Thuban. When you're down a passage that perfectly aligned, that deep in the pyramid and that pitch darkness that shuts out the sun, you can see the stars. How many of you know that? Thuban was lined up. Not now. At the same time that Thubin was lined up, Draco, right out in that constellation of Draco, until that star was zeroed in the center of the descending passage of the pyramid, you go so many inches in, pyramid inches, and the scored lines line up perfectly with the Pleiades, which we haven't talked about yet. And it's that crosshair configuration that pinpoints the dating system in the pyramid, which said pyramid showed a full knowledge of the layout of the skies, the heavens, the universe, and the earth in its measurement, size, dimension, and distances. Fixed in stone the distance between the earth and the sun in those ancient days, outlined God's prophetic plan, and is aligned next to the Sphinx that gives the key to interpretation, start with Virgo and end with Leo, and perfectly aligned to the Pleiades that we haven't talked about yet, and Draconis, the one star Thubin. This star, now below the third magnitude, is believed to have once been as bright as Polaris. A bright star on the head of the serpent is named Ethanin, which means the long serpent, the dragon. It's way down here in the head of the dragon, Ethanin. Now, you can probably take this book, take a trip up here to an observatory in the Los Angeles area and get lined up on the skies, and you'll be able to follow this. I wonder if they'd let me do a festival up there. Suppose they'd let us go up there and do a festival. Somebody ought to check into that. A bright star in the head is named Ethanin, which means the long serpent or dragon. Another bright star also on the head is called Rastaban, meaning the head of the subtle. In Arabic, it is called Al-Wa'id, which means who is to be destroyed. The Hebrew names of other stars and their meaning are Grumian, the subtle, Gianzar, the punished enemy. The Arabic names of the stars in Draco have similar meanings. To name a few, Al-Dib, the reptile, El-Atik, the fraudful, the cunning fraud, El-Asiya, the bowed down. Draco thus represents the sly and creeping deceiver. The devil called the dragon, that old serpent, he destroys by stealth, smoothly gliding to betray, giving his poison. Mythology says the dragon is the power that guarded the golden apples of the famous Garden of Hesperides. Nothing other than a symbol of the tree of life. Perverted in mythology to have him guard it, in order that the symbol of Hercules, who was made into a human demigod, could defeat that dragon to get that apple. But Hercules is Christ, and dragon is Satan. Now let's put them all together again. That message in the stars, again, I don't expect you to remember this detail unless you want to become an amateur astronomer, and there are some good books I could recommend. But God had a message that's been distorted by heathen who were outside the stream of God's oracle. That's why when Paul talks about the Jew not having any special place of righteousness, he says, well, does that mean they had nothing? Oh, yes, they did. They were honored by being the oracle through whom God would preserve the truth of his revelation. But the revelation was always there. The reclining woman, the symbol of purity and virginity, lying down, unable to stand, yet paradoxically portraying birth of the righteous seed in one hand and the branch, the righteous branch, who would grow up in the other hand. Immediately moving in the supporting constellations to the infant that is the desire of the ages, to the two-natured centaur in a subdecon there, to the shepherd who would guard his sheep, to the next constellation of the scales that need one able to balance, one who has the price. Confronting the scales, goes to the cross, pays the price, becomes the victim. Suddenly, the scorpion's on the scene to sting the heel, but to have the other foot of the man who wrestles with the serpent on his heart, and the one who wrestles the serpent holds him from getting the crown that he had obtained in the previous decan. Then we go on through to the centaur with the arrow to the heart of the scorpion, the eagle who pounces and brings the joy of the harp. Every sign, they're counting me down, so I've got to stop in the middle of a sentence. Come on up, run up here quickly, Ron. Play something.